Hello, this is Melissa. It is the 16th of August, 2026. I hope that you are all doing well. I am going to play for you a talk from August the 16th, 2020, and just the first, just under an hour of that. This is one of the 2020 talks. It ran for nearly 4 hours. I will link to the original talk if you have the time and want to re-listen to that. I'll put the link up, and also I'll put the link up for the transcript. So the title of this is The New Freedom, Intel Agencies, Birds of a Feather, Trading Our Info, All in It Together. Our minds are mined for greater good, and hiding thoughts is terribly rude. Let experts examine, let them peruse, repair, and fix us. Don't dare refuse. This is a talk that I chose about 10 or 12 minutes of to play not that long ago. I'm not repeating much, maybe a few sentences from that section, and that was on the 26th. But first of all, it's the timing. This was the 16th of August. Today is the 16th of August. So the planets were aligned, so to speak. And there's just things that I am thinking of, which include how information that we receive is controlled, disinformation, counterintelligence, the landscape that is landmined that we have to make our way through every day if we take in information in any form whatsoever. Some of the things that I was thinking about. But before I dive into just a couple of stories here, I wanted to thank Graham and Gabrielle, for illustrating the video last week. It was just beautiful. I really appreciate it. I said to Graham, I have a lot of things that I need to put my attention on right now, and it would just be helpful if every once in a while, if I could ask you to illustrate a video for me, if you could do that. And he said, sure, I can do this week. So I took him up on that. And that was the beautiful video that he made that is entitled Modern Mythological Enemies Versus the Man in the Mirror. And I say he made because I know that Gabrielle is there. She's also weighing in on aesthetics and so forth. And they found a beautiful, wordless, mostly silent documentary from about 30 years ago called Baraka. And the imagery just suited the talk perfectly. So I appreciate that. And once again, on the Alan portion of today's video, Graham illustrated that for us, and I appreciate it. There are many things that I am working on right now. Some of them are long-term projects. You know, there was the second edition of the Cutting Through books. Before that, there was a flash drive, and some things just take a lot of time and attention. So I'm really grateful for the help. I also wanted to mention that I love to hear from you in any form. Receiving letters is always fun. Getting, you know, going to the post office, I rent the post office box, so it's nice that if it actually gets used. And sometimes I wonder, can I afford to keep it going? But that is CTTM. Post Office Box 815, Keene, Texas, 76059, USA. And I wanted to say that over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I have received some nice letters, a couple of postcards, some honey. This is a young man who has been doing farming for several years, and just in the last year, the farm that he's working for has put him on the job of beekeeping, and he loves it. He's just fallen in love with beekeeping, and he sent me some wonderful honey, and I have really been enjoying that. Last week, I went to the post office. I think it was the beginning of this week on Monday, actually, and I received a package, and it was a painting, and I'm going to show you the painting. It blew me away. Now, I'm not raising the bar impossibly high and saying that you've got to send me honey and paintings. I'm just telling you what I got that I was happy about. This is a black and white and gray toned painting based on an image that I used from the video that I put up. I think it was, the 2nd of August, Chaos, Conflict, and Caritas. And I made it black and white. Once I got started on it, I stayed with black and white. And when I found that image, it's a woman with her hair up in a knot in the back, and she's sort of reading in front of a window. You can't really tell, is she reading or has she paused a moment to look out the window? And this listener that I've never heard from painted that image and mailed it to me. And the amazement and just love and gratitude that I felt when I opened that up. Now, he's promised that there's a letter that's coming in the mail, but that was it. He said, I was just in a hurry to get this off to you. And I thank you so much for this. It's just beautiful. And I'm happy to share this painting with everyone. Now, postcards without honey and paintings are just fine. I can't tell you why it means so much to me, except it's a feeling of being connected, appreciation for one another. And, you know, emails are wonderful too, so I'm not knocking, and private messages that I receive, it's all good. It's all good, so thank you for that. So, just a couple of quick things that I want to bring to your attention. And the first is this. U.S. Navy veterans and military health experts express concern over USS Abraham Lincoln sailors. Prolonged deployment is coupled with reports of water shortages, plumbing issues, and attempts to jump overboard. Trump downplays concerns about sailors on board USS Abraham Lincoln. Now, I guess the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, came out and said, oh, this is overblown and they're just fine. This was based on one message that one young sailor sent home to his mother saying he was miserable and it got all blown out of proportion. I'm going to post an article here from The Guardian that maintains that these veterans, these Navy veterans, have spent 9 months at sea supporting the U.S. operations in the Middle East, and they report conditions that are not good and worsening mental health because of this. So it has been there for 250 consecutive days, no port visits, no touching ground, just there, and they say it's not good conditions. Based on information available to the command, we have not identified an increase in reported suicidal ideation or suicide attempts aboard the ship. This is the official Navy report, adding that religious, medical, and mental health professionals were available as part of a comprehensive support network that included onboard deployment resilience counselors and chaplains. However, the sailors say they live in close quarters. There are some junior personnel that are sleeping in open bays. There are plumbing problems, broken toilets, all kinds of things that have a depressing impact. But my comment, my thought to the whole story is, of course, they're demoralized because no matter what kind of propaganda they've imbibed, they must know at a certain level that they are deployed to fight someone else's war. Let's just call it what it is, someone else's war. That's demoralizing. And it goes on, you know, with Trump's crazy things that he says, every day something new is, you know, he said that the Strait of Hormuz is completely under the control of the U.S. And, you know, of course, the Iranians said, no, that's not true. And, you know, you're more than $4 at the gas pump, you know, per gallon, says that's not true, but that's what we're being told. Now, another story crossed my line of sight this week, and this is from LifeSite News. And you can find it in a lot of different places, so, you know, there's not a particular lot of spin on it here, even though it is coming from LifeSite. So I'm just going to read it to you. Jewish scholar elected to lead Catholic Biblical Association. The Catholic Biblical Association emphasized that Jewish professor Amy Jill Levine's standing with Rome is best recognized by the fact that she had three audiences with Pope Francis. A Jewish New Testament scholar, newly elected as president of the Catholic Biblical Association, CBA, stated that one of her major aims is to confront supposedly anti-Jewish interpretations of Christian scripture. Professor Amy Jill Levine will serve as the association's president for the 2026-2027 year. According to a National Catholic Reporter article that hailed her election, Levine has argued that many clergy members continue to rely on commentaries acquired during their seminary education decades ago, rather than newer research on the Jewish contexts of Jesus, the Pharisees, and the Gospels. So Levine said, I'd like to get this better, this newer material, into the hands of people who are speaking to people in the pews. Levine described herself as a guest in this house. Her approach to Jewish Christian scholarship is not to challenge Catholic doctrines, she said, but to examine the historical and human setting in which Christianity emerged. For Levine, that historical approach does not diminish Catholic faith. Instead, she said, it can deepen Catholic theology by taking with abundance seriously the humanity of this person, Jesus Christ, whom the Church proclaims to be God. There, when I read that, I remembered a book that Alan and I read together that was written in 1962 by Maurice Pinet, and I'm going to link to it on archive.org. It's called The Plot Against the Church. Now, Maurice Pinet is an amalgam of traditionalist French priests and laymen who published under the pseudonym of a single person, Maurice Pinet, sometimes called M. Pinet. And this appeared in 1962, and it coincided with the opening sessions of Second Vatican Council. And anyone who is a Catholic is going to be aware of the impact of Second Vatican Council on the Catholic Church. But even if you just, you know, kind of vaguely follow religion or religious history, you may be aware of that. The book was designed to influence the Council Fathers against adopting the reforms regarding religious liberty and relations with the Jewish people, basically what they called ecumenism or ecumenical ideas that brought together lots of different thoughts and tried to, you know, make them all equal. Now, the text is often referred to as anti-Semitic in tone, and I can certainly see how that claim can be made, because the book maintains that it was a Judeo-Masonic conspiracy against the Church, that was what Vatican II was. But for whatever its slants, the book itself is fascinating. And if you have time to read it, I highly recommend it. I think it's good to learn as widely as possible, to take as many points of view as you can, and discard. Maybe they got something right, maybe they got something wrong. So This is in the intro of the translation. Now, I've got a translation here that's into English from German and Spanish, and these were French priests who wrote it. And there's always a problem with translations. But they are maintaining here in the introduction that this council is convened, the Second Vatican Council, by of conspiracy plotters, they refer to them, of Freemasons, Communists, and Jews who have the intention of reversing the centuries-old position of the Catholic Church on the Jews. And in fact, that is the outcome of Vatican II. That is what happened. So it's interesting. It's an interesting piece of history. Now, having said that, and having encouraged you to read the book if you have time, I am going to say that we find ourselves in a time right now when the old that hasn't already been destroyed is being destroyed quickly in front of our eyes to make way for the new. And everything that I have just been talking about, whether it's the military and your country going to fight for another country, or it's the church that you uphold has the truth, these are all part of a system. They are all part and parcel of the system. And this is the pretty much the entirety, start to finish, of Alan Watts' Cutting Through books. You are born into a system. So I don't bring this up to say this, you know, one side is good, the other side is not good. I'm saying this is what is happening now. And the reason why it's happening is in part because this is the time of maximum chaos. What comes out of chaos? Order. You need, if you want a lot of order, you need a lot of chaos. So a big part of this section of the Redux, the section of this talk from August 16, 2020 that I'm playing, has to do with how long information has been controlled. Again, you know, Alan takes this back to, like, let's just say forever. And I remember speaking with someone, actually, that Alan and I knew not too long after he passed away, and she said that she appreciated that Alan had pointed her to, you know, the possibility, opened up so much possibility, and then she could research and get into a lot of things. And a lot of things that she had researched involved what is sometimes called a Russian conspiracy theory of new chronology, that brings in some of the mud flood stuff is brought by new chronology. There's a lot of different ways that that spins off, but one of the claims is that ancient civilizations like Rome and Greece and Egypt never existed as dated. That basically the world before 1600 AD was fabricated by conspirators that included the Vatican and the Holy Roman Empire and, you know, so forth. But at any rate, I bring that up, and a lot of things, I am not going to bother to list all of the conspiracies or all of the things that you could think aren't real or don't exist, or they just want you to think that this exists, or they just want you to think that they have these capabilities or these technologies. That's a form of control. And I think that's dangerous. I also think it's kind of skirting the perimeters of disinformation campaigns and counterintelligence. Alan Watt has described very clearly over a number of years how counterintelligence works. You have intelligence. Alan was intelligence. He came out with what was at that time new information and an understanding of history, a deep understanding of history. that has now been spun in a million directions by posers, wannabes, little Charlie Mansons. And it's unfortunate, but that's what counterintelligence does. It puts the lizard in the mix. That's disinformation. So be careful. As Alan says in this talk, be careful. When, our friend said that to me, I thought, well, for me, Alan was the omega, I guess you could say, because I didn't have to go down those rabbit holes. I didn't have to look at that. It had been explained to me in a way that I could understand it, that we live in a very controlled system. And everything that is put out for us, everything but everything, is intelligence agencies' work. I had an opportunity recently to speak with someone on the Real History, who was very cagey. It's an interesting and educational thing to see, very cagey about what is possible. Okay, well, capabilities and constraints. And it was, a wait of, say, 2.5 hours or so, but I got the thing that for me was important, which was the concession that we get what Alan Watt called predictive programming in the fiction of people like Michael Crichton. That was the example used. And there was another young writer, Daniel Wilson, who incidentally, I looked him up later, was the authorized writer of the sequel to Andromeda Strain that was Crichton that came out after Crichton passed away. What this person that I was speaking with was saying is that these writers are able to work within the realms of what is available, the technologies that are available, and then just bring them out a little bit into the future. They don't go out into the fantastical. That is interesting. I think it's worth something considering. We are definitely, in the way that things are being conveyed to us now, we are definitely in a world in which I think much more is possible than it would make your head spin. And I am going to post an article. I posted it already once before, but I'm going to repost it. And it came out last year from Forbes magazine, The Past, Present, and Future of Brain-Computer Interfaces. And one of the things that is very interesting to me here, and this is coupled with a relatively new piece of information, in this article, they talk about the fact that there's damage that is done to the brain when you put a device in it. A chip has, basically prongs that attach it to the gray matter, and that destroys cells. So there is actually a term for that. If you read this article, you'll find out that that's called butcher ratio. And that's the ratio, the number of neurons that the BCI kills relative to the number of neurons that it can record from. But this fellow that worked for Elon Musk's Neuralink has started his own company recently, and it's a zero butcher ratio, because rather than have the brain chip prong attached to the brain, this floats like a battery between the skull and the brain. So it says, perhaps the information is not as strong, the connection is not as strong, but it's still very accurate in what it's getting. So that's just something that I wanted to put up. You see a lot of things that are online that they want to kind of go into the fantastical, I guess, where they, somebody will post it and it takes off on X, or somebody writes about it on Substack. There's a lot of rubbish out there, so be very careful. And there are a lot of wild claims. But there was something that came up in a comment section on something that I posted recently about something that Atali had said about euthanasia, and you know, it's a eugenics idea that came from Jacques Attali that Alan Watt has mentioned many times. And it was such a provocative comment that I had to look it up and see if I could actually find it or find anything about it. And this was attributed to Jacques Attali in a 1981 interview with Michel Salomon, spelled the same way as Salomon's House from Bacon's New Atlantis. Interesting. And there was an interview that was said to have been published in the book in which Attali said that a pandemic was necessary to reduce the population, target the elderly, the weak, and the stupid. And this is the quote attributed to Attali. In the future, it will be a question of finding a way to reduce the population. We will start with the old, because as soon as it exceeds 60 to 65 years, man lives longer than he produces and costs society dearly, then the weak, and then the useless who do nothing for society, because there will be more and more of them, especially the stupid ones. Euthanasia targeting these groups, etc. It goes on for about another paragraph. Well, that caught my eye, and I looked it up, and I couldn't find that quote anywhere online. But I did find some idea that perhaps this was not factual. And indeed, it's not. I think because the book is in French, and, you know, I did find a translation into the English, and I read that chapter. I read the interview with Attali this morning, and it isn't in there. And I read another publication, someone else who had actually translated it from the French, and they weren't there to debunk that particular quote, but they were just there looking for everything that had been said. Okay, why am I saying this? Well, I will share one reason why. And that is because this is from Futurism magazine and sent to me by Neil Foster. AI companies are buying antique books, ingesting their contents to train models, and then destroying them at incredible scale. The world's best AI training data is setting on a shelf. I don't know if they mean setting or sitting, and now I'm questioning my own grammar here. Traditionally, books have been good for two things, reading and looking nice on a shelf, but AI companies are interested in neither. To those building large language models, books are nothing more than fodder to be devoured en masse before being spit out like fishbone. Often they're happy to use digital books, or even better, pirated digital books, as Meta has been accused of doing, and as Anthropic was forced to pay $1.5 billion settlement to authors for also doing. But many companies, including Anthropic, have turned to ingesting physical books instead, which they can buy countless used copies of on the cheap, thanks to your local library's weeding program. According to the settled lawsuit, Anthropic used a hydraulic-powered cutting machine to neatly remove the pages from the books it procured from book resellers and then scanned them using industrial-grade imaging equipment. In other words, it was literally ripping off authors' books to train its AI. Okay, I'm going to post this article here. But what is much more concerning than the authors being ripped off, which is bad enough, is that this is, you know, obviously it's memory hole. And you know that AI hallucinates, which means it lies to you. And if you don't actually know the answer or kind of are in the ballpark, and you feed a question into an artificial intelligence, Grok or whatever, the answer that you get back may well be a hallucination or a lie. So what else is going on? Terafab. Terafab is a planned semiconductor fabrication plant jointly developed by Tesla, SpaceX, and Intel. This is a gigantic, it's in the talking about phases, and it has some regulatory paperwork that has been signed off on, but it's going to be a prototype fab operations. That's for chip design, fabrication, memory production, advanced packaging. It's all going to take place at one location in the Austin, Texas area, or in a county called Grimes County, which is interesting because one of Musk's ex-wives was named Grimes. This is going to be large. That's one of the things that people are talking about, is how large it's going to be. 100 times larger than the Pentagon. Just an enormous building. So it's going to kick off 1 terawatt of output that it can do. That AI compute is how they say it. So this is annually. Now, I think that we are right now at the point of, well, not nearly that much, 20 gigawatts. So Musk framed the ambition in planetary terms. Current global AI compute output sits at roughly 20 gigawatts per year. Terafab is targeting a terawatt, which means the combined output of every existing fab on Earth today, representing about 2% of the stated goal. Something also in Texas is the Giga Factory, Texas, Giga Texas, it's sometimes called. And it's an automotive manufacturing facility outside of Austin. This is huge. If you look at an aerial view of this, and then you know how many times bigger the Terafab is going to be. It's astonishing. And then the data centers and all the water for the data centers. One question that we want to ask ourselves is, why are they doing this? People have been using iPhones and devices and iPads and computers and personal computers for a long time, and they tell us all how quickly people are adapting. Let us, for just a moment, ask the question, why? And then think in terms of robotics, driverless cars, etc. Does that explain it all? And so your environmentalism is out the window. Nobody's going to be talking about wind power, are they? Wind power could not generate the electricity needed to run any of these plants or data centers. So will we hear less and less about climate change, or will these two improbable things run side by side? But the why? And while we're not really paying attention to what is going on directly around us, I mean, this is in, my area, we're given kayfabe. The Fauci Senate hearings, the what was in the vaccine, how many miscarriages is that causing? And again, this is an area that is just... it's exploded and has all through COVID with gross misinformation. And what a result of gross misinformation is, it turns information, it turns intelligence into counterintelligence, it turns information into disinformation. You can't trust the mainstream media, but nor can you trust the people who come out and say, we're medical freedom talkers, and then exaggerate the number of miscarriages grotesquely based on studies that they know were flawed. But rather than point out that the mainstream was using a flawed study, they jump on the flawed study themselves, the medical freedom people, who you think are your heroes, you better question that, and give you flawed information. We in book club are covering Morals and Dogma, very, very interesting, and it's really a good insight into how the system works. And someone, I think it was Graham, actually suggested to Fiona to watch The Brotherhood of the Bell. This is a film that Alan Watt has recommended to us quite a few times. And she did, and she and her husband did a write-up on it for book club. And it was very interesting. And there is a scene in that movie that's just outrageous, where our protagonist is trying to get his story heard, and he ends up getting on a talk show that is just the what you might call the dregs of society, and yelling and screaming, it's the Jews. No, it's not the Jews. It's the Jesuits. No, it's not the Jesuits. It's the, so that you can't see what is in front of you. And someone just reminded us of a talk that Alan Watt gave. I'll link to that one too. And this was mentioned in that. A caller mentioned to him, did you see Ron Paul on the Morton Downey show? This was from 1988. If this isn't kayfabe, meaning scripted wrestling, then I don't know what is. This is when Ron Paul was running for president. Now there is his son doing the same kind of kayfabe with Fauci. You think anything's going to come out of this? So you've got to be careful. I'm pointing out, I'm not trying to create kayfabe here by saying, read The Plot Against the Church by Maurice Pinet and consider this. I'm asking you to inform yourselves as deeply as you can on any information, because there are so many people who will come out and it's just this one thing, this one topic that they hit over and over. If only people can know that this one group of people want to destroy your culture. If only people could know that, you know, it's a military operation behind this so-called pandemic. If only you could know. The truth is much simpler and yet much subtler. And that is what Alan was telling us about week in and week out, is it's an ancient system of total control of information, the same ancient system that brought you the religions that are constantly warring, the same ancient system that brought you the governments that have their puppets in place, where you've got machinations high above that run the show. So that is it for me today. I appreciate hearing from you. I hope that you have a good week, and I'll talk to you again.
Absolute control over every living soul in life. has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
This is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 16th of August 2020. And as always, I hope you're doing as best as you can under the circumstances of utter chaos and madness, all organized, of course, because what's happening now is the designing, redesigning of society across the planet and redefining what we are as human beings. And and societies in general, in fact. Right down to genders, as you well know, it's been a big one on top for quite a few years, is all concepts of what used to be called normalcy or normative is being redesigned again, all of it, in order to destroy resistance among society to changes, the planned changes. Before you, it's harder, very, very difficult to bring in a whole new way of living without destroying the previous generation. Because naturally they'll dig their heels and say, no, you can't do this, and this is ridiculous and mad and a whole bit. And so bit by bit, over maybe a 20, 25-year period, you chip away through education, through the school system, grab them young, and they grow up to about 25 or so. And they've got all the new ideas instilled in them, all the new indoctrinations, and it works awfully well in them. And then you've already hammered and hammered through repetition, through all kinds of dramas and movies and so on, where they embed all the different new norms into their storylines, etc., until all age groups parrot the same stuff because they can't trust their own logic anymore, nor their own memory either. And that's how it's all designed, you see, until you can't trust your own judgment. Just listen to the experts. In fact, last week I mentioned one of the articles that came out from the top groups of thinkers, you know, scientific thinkers, telling us not to think for ourselves on these very important topics. We're not qualified to think deeply on them. So there you go. This is the farce of the time we're living through, a complete redesigning of society. And every possible method of deception and manipulation, psychological manipulation and coercion, is in use right now. It's quite astonishing to watch it all. And it's too big for even one person or a group of people to keep up with all of it, because it's overwhelming in a sense. But years ago, when they were hammering on about artificial intelligence and how it was going to reshape society, and Al Gore came out, because Al Gore is a player in certain areas for financial teams and for fleecing the public for carbon taxes and trading them and making a profit on them, all these kind of things. We're ruled by crooks, if you haven't figured it out. And especially since the time of post-democratic society, which the Club of Rome came out with years ago. They said on behalf of their masters, they paid them, the big think tank, the Club of Rome, and they were given a task, different tasks actually, about redesigning society, because the elite themselves in the big business classes, the ones with the corporate raiders types that were going across the world and having their big talks with CEOs that were treated like gods and with their innovative ideas of, you know, having workforces or slashing it to the bone and then reselling off what was left of corporations, the corporate raiders. They literally wanted to take over the whole system. And this darn nuisance called democracy was a problem. It got in the way of profits, quick profits. So if you could do away with democracy, you could get your big plans made and worked out and implemented with no real kickback from the public. You see, you eliminated the public problem. And that's what you've been living through ever since, including the whole idea of climate change. It was a Club of Rome that came up with that idea of blaming humanity for the climate, you see. And that way you could bring in the sustainability, you could bring in all kinds of new ideas, a new way of living, again, austerity for the public, with high prices for everything, mind you. So the corporations don't, they're not losing anything, they get more, in fact, for giving you less, especially in all energy forms too, like technocracy planned long ago. So you're living through an agenda, a big, big agenda, and of course science and business work together under the guise of public-private partnerships. And of course what they do is they put in businessmen often, sometimes minor businessmen, as politicians. They're assets, if you like, and many of them actually are assets of intelligence agencies. That's been going on for years. Obama was well connected, so was Clinton actually, the Rhodes Scholar Bill Clinton. Went over to London to study there with his scholarship, Oxford Rhodes Scholarship, and then disappeared there and spent the rest of his time in the Soviet Union. and then came back and they made him president of America. It's quite interesting to watch what happens, because you see, the real world has got nothing to do with what you've been brainwashed to believe. It really hasn't. I mentioned it before, this strange travel of important people and sciences and so on during the whole Cold War is the last thing you'd allow in reality for international meetings of this or that, however. You'd never allow it, so let your best people go there and collaborate with your supposed enemies and exchange ideas and information, etc. But they did that every year. So nothing made any sense until you really figure out there's a different game on the go. The game's always against the public. And first and foremost, you must understand what power is. And power is a means of gaining control over people, either with or without their consent. It depends how you do it. And to benefit, of course, agendas again, you know, like post-democratic, get the job done and to heck with the public. That type of idea. Or, as I say, it's also used for business in this day and age. Business was elevated, as I say, during the time of the corporate raiders to a much higher level. And they really did. They literally did hostile takeovers of businesses by grabbing the shares and so on, getting the controlling shares, and then slashing everything to the bone. And what you don't realize is back in the 1970s and 80s, you had lots of family-owned businesses, and maybe second or third generation. Big businesses too, with factories, etc. And they still had that idea of having responsibility, those who owned the businesses, to the people who worked there with them. This strange old-fashioned idea that you're responsible in some way. And of course, the new system was again, the corporate raiders. They had no conscience about anything like that. And they called everybody dead weight, and you'd slash them and kick them off. And folk coming up to retirement lost their everything, their pensions, a lot. This was these were early warning signs and symptoms of what was to come for, again, this technocratic, as they call it, technocratic system of controlling the world, you know. There's nothing in Technocracy Inc. that said that those that would control it should be poor, or as poor as the general public were going to be. On the contrary, you see, so it's very appealing, this idea of technocracy, where everything is reduced to energy. And of course, energy at the moment is simply transmuted into a dollar value or a pound value or a euro value or whatever it happens to be. And you're subject to it, you see. But it really, supposedly, under their idea, was that everything is energy. To make a product, it's all energy. Somebody puts out the energy to make this or change it from this to that. It's all really gradients and change of energies, you see. And so the idea was to bring in a perfect world where those who had the right to rule it would be technocrats. Not an elected right, but a natural right. Just like communism idea, without being subjected to or really responsible to the public again. Because you see, they were the experts, and experts should run the world. That was the idea. It's quite amazing, as I say, when you look at today, and the CEOs of corporations that walk on water with their ridiculous TED Talks, they always have to create their own lingo to be in-house. You know, you're one of us. Here's the latest terminology to be cool. They come up with new terms all the time about their particular area, and they flap their hands a lot, like Bill Gates does, because they've all done their motivational, you know, training, etc. And apparently impresses punters if you flap your hands a lot and you wave your arms and run them down the stage. And they're like peas in a pod, in a sense. And they have to be really innovative, which means even more startling than the person before them. That's what they mean by innovation. And the idea, too, is interlaced with psychology, where psychologists got into the social area long ago, you see, to do with factory management and so on, and how to manage the people who were doing monotonous tasks and making them work harder and faster, and then trying to deal with the emotional upset it would cause so that they didn't crack up and claim compensation, things like that. So make everything more efficient. In fact, you get them on drugs, that would be, as long as they could still do, put out the same output that was quite good, you see. So put them all on drugs and even give them counselling. If they're really good employees, you could put down to insurance and put them, and get counselling for them so they could manage to handle the extra stress at work, you see. And so psychology is a big, big part of managing us all with technocracy today. Look at the COVID thing. How many millions of dollars have been spent using these behavioral insights teams to con us and lie to us, to get us to do things that they want, that the elite want us to do on behalf of those who rule us? I don't say we govern us, they rule us. I don't elect anybody, so why are they ruling me? I don't vote. It's a con game. It's been a con game all my life. The elite have always got their people into office, and I'll touch on a few things tonight that even show it, perhaps more openly and evidently than things beforehand. For instance, that there are some good videos out right now. There's a lot of good videos if you want to spend your life watching videos, but and I can't even get the speed to watch them because I'm getting hammered by it. It isn't just going after your income or shadow banning now. I've had this for years. They literally have got my server to slow me down to like 1 to 2 megabits per second up until midnight. And I can't watch anything until midnight, you see. And then like a magic switch, it just turns on, yeah? And which is what it is, it's a switch. So I get throttled and choked and so on. I had that years ago, the same problem. For years and years and years, when I was doing lots of shows and so on, like sometimes 5 a day, and putting out information that people really hadn't heard before. I kind of broke the rules because I realized, that's why I came out. People were navel-gazing. You had a lot of people in the States who stuck on the same topics, but it was navel-gazing. They didn't realize there was a big world agenda. And I came out and I didn't connect the dots for them all and give them information and what was really, really happening. And that caused a big stir at the time. But after a while, I got hammered. I could, as I say, I'm right back to where I was, where I was getting one or two. I was going to download something, in fact, before I did this talk. And it was only, I think, 24 megabytes. It was that, the speed is that slow. And it said it would take me a day to download the 24 megabits. That's how bad I get hit hammered here. So don't think that I'm sitting here and I'm not getting... I've been getting hammered since day one. I was getting shadow banned before you heard the term. Once I realized what I was talking about, and it's like a panic mode, and suddenly, people couldn't find me. It's very suddenly. Because I was saying things I didn't want the public to... You understand, you control information by controlling people. And you understand, too, that in the US especially, and the intelligence agencies in Canada use the US as well, they work with them, that during the Cold War, the CIA set up what was then Patriot Radio across America from the 60s and 70s on. And even hired a lot of pastors and put them on to preach against communism as an antidote to communism. And that worked off pretty well for a time. But then they brought other people in too. And really, it was thick, really thick with propagandists for the CIA. And the all CIA never gives up something that works, for even when it gets to be kind of peacetime. There's never peacetime with the CIA. And the CIA has got nothing to do with what Americans think it has got to do. Really, it really hasn't. The whole idea of a new world order that America must sink into after financing and building in this new world order, and they must themselves sink into it, is a CIA creation. For those who haven't figured it out themselves. And the CIA with different front groups, just like communism, they did many front groups, worked and gave you the Macy groups and all the other groups that combined and worked together, even with Bertrand Russell. He worked with them all, and the Frankfurt schools, and and so on. They all worked together to bring a whole new culture in preparation for a world culture, which they would submerge all the nation states into one big system for total control. And business and technology would rule as we have today. To such an extent that most folk haven't figured it out yet. They still think we're fighting other countries. As I say, tonight I'll put up some links to YouTubes and things, little bits I've seen. I could put after midnight sort of thing. I could see them after midnight, little clips and bits and bites before I get cut off. And I do get cut off all the time. So I don't think I sit here and I've got it quite easy. I've been hammered since, for many years, put it that way. Many, many years getting hammered with problems. And it's all intentional, naturally. Because those who think they're living in a reality, a little bubble of we're democratic, or even if you're in a republic, a democratic right to vote and so on, then it's a republic. Well, go back to sleep. And I think George Carlin said it, the comedian George Carlin, he said about the American dream. He says, of course, he says you have to be asleep to believe in it. It's a dream. And he says, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And that's so true. But today, with the complete interconnection of agencies, like spy agencies, and business, big business, technology, and assets. You see, most people who work for agencies are assets. They work in front companies and so on. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of front companies, especially in intelligence work to do with technology. And they share it and they sell it across the world. And this whole idea that you're living in a nation that protects its borders is a joke anyway, but even its airwaves borders and its AI borders is an utter farce. Because they've got people working in all different countries to manage us all, basically. And again, as I say, I'll touch on that tonight because it's important you understand how some of it works, at least some of it works. Even if what the ones that are showing you it sometimes are maybe an agency themselves. Eh? Never ever stop and just take everything and swallow it for granted. But years ago, I can remember talking about companies. One of them was Stratfor. And Stratfor is well known as an intelligence asset. They'll call it an asset, even though it's all intelligence folk that work in it, and often from different countries too, one in particular. But they work with the CIA and all the top ones, and the Pentagon has its own agencies. Everybody's got its own. The Navy has its own agency, a very high one, in fact, the US Navy, just like the UK and Britain. But they all work together for the common good, which is their own wallets and the promotions and continuation after retirement into very lucrative positions for in the military-industrial complex. So, once again, it's only people at the bottom that think these are our guys, you know, and gals. And no, it's not. They're not at all. They're bought and paid for. And they often have less integrity than the person in the street who's way more patriotic than the person up yonder. And that, again, is very true because of the incredible indoctrination that we all have. And these are natural instincts we have to be patriotic. It's very, very, it's tribal. Very tribal, and we get attached even to the dirt we're born on, basically. That's where your nation is, it's your home. It's a natural thing. So it never dawns on you that the people who are paid to so-called represent it, even in armed forces at the very, very top, are often on the payrolls for much higher agencies, the intelligence services, that are working for a different, completely different agenda, and including their own pursuit of incredible wealth for its members. And there's nothing they don't know about you. Nothing. And I used to give the talks years ago, and I said, you know, you're giving all your data to them every day willingly on Facebook and Twitter and And then you, and even your emails are all, you know, they're all read. But from that, in a daily program, they can update it automatically. All your profiles are updated automatically, and whatever you add to you, to people you're communicating with, is all put on near your profile. And they work out, and they've got pretty perfect simulations they can run with you, a virtual you, putting you through the virtual you through scenarios, like life scenarios, and predicting very accurately how you will handle these different situations. They've got yourself all sussed out. And that's all sold from intelligence agencies to other private agencies that work with them. That's how they get around the legalities of things, by using private agencies too, you see. That's quite something, eh? But don't think for one moment that your government, in fact, your government is so far off into the future, in a sense, and has been for a long time. Most folk will never catch up to what it's all about. And I've mentioned some awfully good drama series. There's more reality in them, like The Last Enemy series in Britain, to show you how far the technology was even then from GCHQ. Watching everybody, and not just in their own country, but across the world, including people they knew would migrate to Britain from other countries. And so it all worked out who they were before they'd even come into the country. It's just astonishing. And then, as I say too, the agencies themselves, they're often competing with each other for, again, it's always for money at the top, the very, very top, because information is incredibly well, you know, people buy it for big bucks, massive, you know. Blackwater, I think, recently bought over one of the genealogical research firms that y'all volunteer to give all your data about your DNA and your heritage to, you just can't help people, eh? You can't. And insurance companies just love this. Oh, now we know these folk are prone to this whole lineage there, and who they're related to, their other cousins. They're probably so much percentage prone to this and that as they are too. And it's all worked out with algorithms pretty precisely. And up goes your insurance. Or I'll say, well, in the present state with the COVID nonsense, you know, now that they're deciding, you know, openly who's going to live and who's going to die before you go into the hospital, should you happen to go in, if they're even bored, going to bring you in and give you treatment. Because, you see, they're trying to spend the money on the ones who are more likely to come through. Have you figured out the hospitals are not privately owned? They're privately owned in a good deal, at least half of them. Like half of their cost is privately owned. Corporations work them all. Tonight I'll put up a good documentary. It's up on Vimeo, a free. Yeah, I should watch it for free. I think mostly still paid elsewhere, but Vimeo has the permission of John Pilger, a free one up on the National Health Service in Britain, the war on the National Health Service. And he does a good job, as always, into what's happened when they show the corporate raiders that go in there and they slash and burn, and how they can. They took over hospitals for, like, East Anglia as one project, and multi-million dollar, you know, they get paid multi. These CEOs get multi-million dollars paychecks to go into the social constructs of the hospitals, so financed by the people, the taxpayers, and they plunder them for themselves and destroy how it works and destroy lives in the process. And they give you in the documentary that he puts out one example, say the East Anglia, where I think it was East Anglia Hospital, where this guy Ali Parsa, who Ali Parsa owns at the moment many, his fingers in lots of pies to do with healthcare and so on, for profits naturally. He was a head guy at Goldman Sachs before all this kind of thing, and now he's got an app out, the Babylon app, in the UK, so he can get virtual GP or doctor consultations, when it costs you, of course. He's just a humanitarian, you understand. So that's Ali Parsa. He apparently has been on TED Talks before, again, a lot of hand-waving and very convincing character. who destroyed some of the hospitals, he's been brought in as management consultants. That's what they call them. We're management consultants. We can help you run it more efficiently. And they slash and burn to the bone for profits, 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 as they partly privatize these hospitals. Right down to some of those hospitals. But anyway, you'll see it in the documentary. The guy should be literally put up there with lots of other faces on massive billboards for the villains that they are, and called that, villains that should have been tried and put in prison for what they've done. Right up to Cameron and all the other different characters that have been, and Tony Blair, to all the usual, all these folk from different parties, they're all the same folks working on the same agendas. And the idea is not to help the people, but to enrich themselves, public-private partnerships. Where have we heard that came out, public-private partnerships, from Prince Charles? You've often heard of that. But the fact is, the ones who brought it out were from the guys in the Trilateral Commission, way back, you know, that they would bring in their system, which again is technocracy. But it's amazing to see all work this way, you see. And what's public-private partnerships? You'll pay for it all and we'll privatize it. So there'll be profit for these guys who are in the private parts. But the public will pay for the upkeeps and yada, yada, yada. And the costs of running it all. Not a bad deal, eh? And because of public-private partnerships, the people have seen their infrastructure sold off to these corporate fascists who plunder you big time and make it more and more inefficient for its electric or water supplies or gas or whatever it happens to be. All these, again, energy areas of technocracy. And it's not stopped. It's to bring a whole world in like this, in fact, with all the resources under the control. Going way back again to Lord Milner, Alfred Milner, and the British Empire idea. It was something to do with going across the world. They told the peasants in Britain this, is to bring civilization to the world. Ancient Rome said the same thing. Because it rolls off the tongue easily. We're bringing civilization, you know, across the world. But it's really to get to resources and the tax base, because you can plunder folks with their taxes. And that's what they did, of course. They didn't start the idea. Even India itself, they had different Maharajis in India who lived off the taxes off the public and all the transactions through commerce and so on. And many of them liked the idea, in fact. When Britain and Clive of India amalgamated a lot of the country under the British Empire, some of them liked it, the Maharajis, because they could split the loot. And Britain liked that too, because they worked awfully well. The elite of Britain worked awfully well with the caste system of India, because those at the top, the Brahmins, were pretty much like the folk who ruled Britain or the city of London. They had a complete disdain for the lower caste, you see. So it was a marriage made in heaven, you see. And they could plunder them all and share the taxes, etc., of the peasants. So no, don't think that Britain invented this idea, or at least I call it London, because the British folk were the same as everybody, even the sepoys, etc., in India that worked for Britain, the military there, for the Raj. They were just the same, young guys who get recruited in the armies, and it never dawns on them really that they're working for something that's corrupt. They think they're being patriotic, generally. Every country is the same, isn't it? Because it's a natural instinct to defend your own country. When a con comes in, you're getting used. They generally never figure that out till it's too late, if they live that long. But that's the system we're living in today, is a CIA-type operation that goes way back before the CIA was given a name. As I said to Lord Alfred Milner, the city of London, the banking fraternity, would rule. And, of course, a lot of that, it was shifted to the Council on Foreign Relations. They shared it and divvied it up in Kipling's time. And they created the CFR in America in the 1920s. And they took their share of it by diverting taxes and so on to special benevolent funds to help folk across the world as it took over other nations. And they could have a massive economic hotspot in New York City, of course. The Empire State. What empire is that? Eh? What empire are they talking about? Well, guess, folks. So folks never generally figure it out. And it's not their fault. But what I will say here is that no matter what the information is that you get, you have to really try and verify it for yourself as best you can. And don't take anything at face value. Because there are so many players in the artificial intelligence world that we're in today, so many players, that you're generally being deceived by somebody along the way. Even people who innocently might part the same stuff off that they've got from elsewhere or send it to, and really believe it, they'll fall for it at times, you know? Because you have no idea the power of manipulation through artificial intelligence. And today, with a lockdown, you can actually see it. When more and more folk are sitting at home on the internet all the time, and some of the things that they'll freak out about, they shouldn't be freaking out about, and they're panicking because that becomes the real world. And they're not seeing people; they're not even meeting people. That's one of the consequences and the casualties of isolation. Is that they start to distrust themselves, and then they'll start falling for things that they shouldn't be falling for, you see. Very sci-fi, isn't it? You're locked in your own little world, and you have no human contact, or very little. And what you get could be coming from, again, computers themselves, just algorithms hitting you, or as I've mentioned before, the 77th Brigade in Britain, of thousands of cyber warfarers, guys that they employ, and their assets, which learn to the multi-thousands of them across the world to use them. This one group based in Britain for the Department of Defense. And these are the guys that literally will pick up those who are putting out information and then attack them like crazy. They've already got all the information on your personality. They know your Achilles heels and they can hit you and try to destroy you internally by pretending to even befriend you. Be awfully careful of this technique. Now, tonight, I'll put up a link as well. And be wary as well, because you don't know where it comes from, really, or who's really behind it, but it's with Millie Weaver, who I don't know much about her myself, except that who knows, if she's involved herself in some kind of intelligence. I just don't know. I don't know. But it could very possibly be, especially when you see the people who have come out and put a video out that she was working on, that Weaver was working on, with a woman called Tore. This is a name she goes by, Tore, and another fella who also worked for security agencies in the US. Very interesting. There's no doubt about it. It's got all the positive facts that come out by this incredible spider web of intrigue and blackmail through intelligence gathering on every single individual, and it really goes into it in some depth. I've only seen little bits and pieces again because I can't get at a constant speed here. I'm getting hit hard because of what I do, and I pay money for it too, to get that ridiculous speed. But as I say, be careful, because as again, the one thing that I do know is that they do go in to how Donald Trump's been hammered and hit. And I don't go into politics myself, because I see them all as just players in the same game, politicians, who are often backed by even foreign powers themselves with big agendas, you see. And I've thought about what I know of Trump. And I had people that when he got elected and said that he's our last hope. I thought, oh my goodness, did they know anything about this guy? He's our last hope. A guy from New York is our last hope. And then you think about his speeches. His speeches are awfully important, even though they're probably written by a speechwriter, you see. But when he was running the last time, he did say he was going to allow Big Pharma and the vaccine industry to cut a lot of corners and get things out to, it was for the public's good, you see, get things out to the public, people in need, with all the incredible testing and delays that they have to go through, for safety. He's going to rush things through. So that was a clue to me right off the bat, who was also backing him. And it was important. I knew then something was going to come down the pike where this was getting put into force, and bingo. But also, he's, and I know Obama did this too, I believe, but they allowed, I remember reading it at the time and talking about it in a talk where they were allowing pharmacology to, or at least the guys who owned the companies, drug companies, to put in different ingredients, substituting ingredients into well-known medications, because they'd be cheaper, these substitutes, than what they were using already. But they may be maybe less safe, and of course they maybe not have, it would not have the same efficacy, you see. So yeah, the bigger prices are bigger prices for the same drugs, and using cheaper chemicals to make them, substituting the ones for the ones that were proven. That was another part of it too. Well, pharmacology is one of the biggest rackets out there, unfortunately. So anything that is to do with people and helping people is an open door for corruption. You know, we're from the government, we're here to help you. That's another one too, is from the state itself. But from big business, from we're part of your community nonsense and stuff like that, right down to we're here to help you. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry in the States alone. And these guys are not there to help you. Look at this incredible OxyContin farce we had for years and years with the family that did it, with again, a lot of help, hey? Knew darn well that this is going to addict millions of people and kill a lot too. Well, they were big profits, big business, and how much collusion of folk in government went along with that. And of course, do you think money didn't? Of course money changes hands, eh? There's other ways of getting money to the people without it being found out. And because we're run by corruption, for God's sake. Utter corruption. From the top to the bottom, there's nothing out there that's not corrupt, including all those at the head of the armed forces. Integrity went out a long time ago, unfortunately, you know. And that was just get rich quick. And the massive military-industrial complex that built up during the Cold War and really quadrupled itself probably at least in the last 15, 20 years of the Cold War, just got worse and worse after the Cold War and changed its sights on the public. I remember years ago, I said, well, what will they do now? What will the military-industrial complex do now that the Cold War is over, they said? Well, it's going to change its way and go into surveillance. And that's where their money would be, in high-tech surveillance of the populace. So there you go. Right? From defending you, because they're there to defend you, you thought, right? To surveilling you and selling you and selling all to government by lobbying. Folk never really figure it out. So anyway, I'll put this link up to Millie Weaver, and she apparently was arrested, I think, who knows, arrested on Friday perhaps, but because of this video, but something to do also with having access to Hillary Clinton's emails or something, which I thought lots of folk probably had. So we'll soon find out. But the same token too, be careful of everything, because you don't know who's working for who, for what. You really don't. I know I won't go any further in some areas, but you really don't. But in the little bits I could glean from in the video, they did go into some of the tricks of the trade and the incredible corruption within all these different agencies that the general population don't even know exist. There's hundreds and hundreds of the front companies, and you'll see the same characters in the US Congress and in the State Department and in the military at the top, all CEOs of the biggest big corporations are buying and selling information for private companies that the taxpayer funds initially through the CIA and NSA, etc., and all get shared with all these private companies, and they make money off you all. But they it did go into how they can manipulate every kind of vote, and how they've got the target areas of even people who will riot and have revolutions. They can actually get them all excited by using the same techniques, by the way, as the 77th Brigade in Britain, and using them in the States, because they know everybody. They're all on cell phones. Obama gave them the cell phones, and they even used that against them. They manipulated all the folk with the free cell phones for the Ferguson riots. You hear the guys explaining how it was done. And I mentioned last week, maybe the week before too, that do you really think that all these folk who are rioting, they don't know all about you? All about you. Never mind that the live assets they have amongst you there, they'll turn you in, all in down the road when it's time to do so. But yeah, they can literally really work on folks' emotions en masse very quickly, by the way, to stir up their angst, etc., by giving them false information, the fake news stuff targeted to their cell phones. Did you know that those so-and-sos are doing this to you? Yeah. And they all get the same information. And you can get them to riot just very, very quickly. Quite amazing. So anyway, there's some good stuff in the documentary. I haven't seen it all because I can't because of my speed and the internet. But again, be wary again as to when folk come forward to help. You don't know, is this another agency working for another agency and so on. And there's some agencies, in Texas, for instance, and California, that are even foreign-owned, you know, that work with the CIA. So it's a murky world out there, as I say, and be very, very careful. But you can learn a lot if you want to, and it might make folk at least a bit more cautious, maybe with their own information, if it really matters, because there's nothing they don't know about you already. And it's disgusting. Our whole reality is utterly run by corruption, total corruption. And everywhere you look, total corruption. And they even mention that too. Everybody's blackmailable. If they want to get you, there's nothing they don't know about you. You'll hear that woman, Tora, in the documentary saying that, yeah, they can find out about if they've got a target, for instance, find out who their acquaintances are, where their relatives are, and then check all the information of the folk who knew them years ago, try and get every little bit of dirt on them they can possibly get, and then use it on them, blackmail them in a sense, to do their own bidding. And that's how the world is run today. Look what happened with the COVID thing, eh? And how many things were working up to a crescendo at the time. You had the Epstein case and the Ghislaine Maxwell, of course. All too conveniently timed for her arrest, knowing this was all going to be swept under the rug to an extent. And with a big, much bigger intelligence operation behind them all, massive intelligence operation, including the fixers and the players and the distributors and the managers of the intelligence agency in the States that was running them too and financing them. Incredible information. And it's all just gone quiet now, isn't it? Pretty well. Because those who control all information and target information to us all know how to do it, and how to just quieten away all the little references to Ghislaine Maxwell. And suddenly it's just COVID, and etc. That's how it's done. You've seen it yourselves, doing searches now. As I say, I don't think there's a single search engine out there now that's untouched. I very much doubt it. And then it'll try to guide you off to the stories that they'd rather you look to rather than the ones you're trying to find. And it's not going to get any better because our systems are utterly corrupt. The people are corrupt and you can't fix it. It's so far gone, you know. Years ago, I said too, even when I first came out talking about all the things, I said, you know, I didn't have a computer then. I said, I didn't want one. I said, I knew what it was for. And I knew it would bring in a hellish world, you know. The old idea that Satan couldn't bring in his world of total control, a hell on earth, without the computer. Because if the complete access to everyone's private thoughts and doings continuously. Couldn't be done, actually. And I knew it wasn't for the public's benefit. I mean, ARPA had it for the military during the Cold War, and they had it since at least the 50s, actually. And right on, and it became DARPA, and then it gave you, at the bottom, obsolete technology right up to the present time. It's still obsolete compared to what they had, in fact, even then. And they'll tell you it's the latest for big profits and all the rest of it. But it was all designed from the beginning to get all your information from you, including the big Google machine, the big massive intelligence operation that even ran their MySpaces and things. I think it did even mention that in a documentary. I think they mentioned that in the documentary about how they did a lot of startup companies themselves. And it's all to get folk to start dishing out their private information, which they would then acquire, you see. It's a morass out there of overlapping agencies, and both governmental and private agencies and private contractors, as they like to call themselves too, that work for them. It's just you can't fix it, folks. But the system was designed that way too, that there would be no protection for the people, the general population. Again, the military-industrial complex is a for-profit business. As I say, they said they would go into mass surveillance when they couldn't be making missiles and anti-missile, ballistic missiles and so on. When at the end of the Cold War, they would go into an intelligence gathering over the public themselves, and spying on the public under the guise of security. Yeah.